Good afternoon. Welcome to Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh, and today I'd like to give the history of a local building that has been in the news quite a bit lately, in the local news that is, and that is near and dear to my heart. I've been wanting to do a show about the history of this building since I began this program in May of last year. The building is St. Patrick's Catholic Church on Bridge Street in the village of Catskill. I'm going to start with giving a history of the building, and then my guest will be Matt Louvira, a member of the Friends of St. Pat's, a group trying to get the church building reopened. As I said, first a little history of the building. There had been a St. Patrick's Parish in Catskill for about 30 years, from about the mid-1850s, before the church building was constructed. The first two pastors were priests from Hudson, Father Howard and Father Sullivan. They would visit Catskill and celebrate Mass in a frame building on William Street. A succession of other pastors served the parish over the next several years. On March 21, 1884, Bishop McNeary appointed Father William J. Finneran as pastor. It was under the direction of Father Finneran that the church building was constructed. Ground was broken in May of 1885, and on August 23, 1885, the cornerstone was laid. On April 25th, 1886, the first Sunday Mass was celebrated in the new church. As a little side note, I find it incredible that a building that size, especially including the steeple and all other features unique to a church, could be built in 11 months and ready for occupancy without the use of modern construction equipment. I'm also assuming that not much work was done on it in the winter months, especially when we actually had severe winters, unlike what we have now. Father Finneran served as pastor until his passing in 1900. Out of all the pastors St. Pat's has had, I'd say he was one of the most notable. Not only did he get the church constructed, but he also supervised the building of the original St. Patrick's Academy behind the church. Another long-serving pastor served from 1971 until 2005 and made a lasting mark on the parish as well. My guest and I will be talking about him a little while later, so stay tuned. And I think a good number of listeners, or at least a good number of local people, knew this man. Catholic or not, churchgoer or not, I think people knew this man. Over the years, the church was renovated and improved. A major addition, done in the 1950s, was the construction of Marion Hall, a meeting and event space in the church basement. Many church dinners and private parties were held there. It also included a stage for performances. As a side note, the stage was only a little bit more than a foot off the floor. But when my first grade class rehearsed our 1976 Christmas pageant there, my teacher, Mrs. Gagan, had to help me up onto it. My six-year-old legs weren't quite as long as my 46-year-old legs. In the 90s, the hall was renovated and mainly used as the meeting space for the Knights of Columbus, the Catholic men's fraternal organization. On Sunday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, of course, 1985, a special Mass was celebrated to mark the centennial of the church building. A number of clergy were in attendance, as were local officials, the Knights of Columbus, Rosary Altar Society, and students from St. Patrick's High School. After the Mass, 100 green balloons with the number 100 on them were released into the sky. Later in the year, on August 23rd, the cornerstone was blessed again. Looking at the church from the front, on Bridge Street, this cornerstone can be found on the right side of the building, just past the steps, and it reads August 23rd, AD 1885. The centennial was also marked by a major renovation of the building in 1986. On the interior, pews were removed and refinished, new carpeting was installed, walls were painted, and other minor changes were made. On the outside, the bricks were sandblasted and repointed, and the ramp was installed to make the church handicap accessible. In the early 90s, the interior was worked on again. All of the walls were sheetrocked, and the 14 Stations of the Cross were removed and repainted by several parishioners, including two of my uncles, Erasmo and Cosmo Casaragola. And if there's anybody out there who is not familiar with the Stations of the Cross, They are 14 scenes, usually done as paintings or frescoes, depicting Jesus' journey from Jerusalem to Calvary for his crucifixion. On Tuesday, May 25th, 1999, disaster struck the church. Shortly before noon, when the daily mass would be celebrated, a bolt of lightning hit the steeple, setting it on fire. I actually saw the flash from my office window in Hudson, and can remember my boss saying that it looked like it hit Catskill. Little did I know what was going on and where it had hit. I remember my mom calling me as I got back from my lunch break and saying there was a fire at our church, and my first thought was that the place was gutted, that the votive candle stands had fallen or something. When she told me it was just a steeple, I was quite relieved. Shaking up, but relieved. Thanks to the excellent work of the Catskill Fire Department, the building was saved, although with considerable water damage to the interior of the church due to the hundreds of thousands of gallons of water poured on. I recall hearing that the firefighters went inside and covered the statues with tarps to protect them. I think that was very thoughtful and considerate of them. Another image sticks with me from that day. I wasn't there to see it, but I remember reading it in the Catskill Daily Mail and seeing a photograph. It still gives me goosebumps to this day. During the fire, after burning for some time, the steeple fell and landed on the lawn between the church and rectory, flames still licking at the gold cross on top. The cross was quickly hosed down, and a firefighter in full gear put it over his shoulder to be placed in the rectory basement for the time being. Of course, seeing him with the cross on his back brings to mind the image of Christ carrying his cross to Calvary for his crucifixion. Warrior image, and it made the front page of the paper. A wonderful piece of reporting and an excellent image. After being closed for repairs for the summer, and having all masses celebrated at our mission church, the now former St. Bridget's Church in Leeds, St. Patrick's was reopened in October. In late December, a new steeple was carefully installed by crane on the church. And during this renovation, lightning rods were installed on the roof and steeple, something that was not done in the 86 renovation in order to save money. Maybe not the wisest decision at that time, but much safer now. We're not going to take that chance again. As I mentioned earlier, we had a long-serving pastor during all of those years, Father John J. Murphy. Father Murphy served from 1971 till 2005 and was very loved by parishioners of the church and students of the school. I can vouch for that because I was one of each. He retired in 2005 and, after several years of health issues, passed away in 2010 on the night before Ash Wednesday. That says something right there, I think. During those last few years, he returned several times to officiate at weddings and funerals, and for a special mass on June 2nd, 2007, commemorating the 50th anniversary of his ordination to the priesthood. At that celebration, the former elementary school behind the building, by then serving as office space, was renamed the Father Murphy Parish Center. In May of 2008, due to structural issues, the diocese deemed the building to be unsafe and it was closed. Mass since then has been celebrated in a new chapel created on the lower level of the Father Murphy Center. In 2010, a capital campaign was launched to get money for repairs to the church, parking lot, and parish center. The parish center at that point was about 48 years old, having served for many years as the elementary school. The parking lot was redone in the summer of 2015. Then, on May 17, 2016, the diocese decided to close the church permanently, citing the high cost of repairs. In July, the bishop issued a decree of relegation, officially desanctifying the church as a place of worship and making it available for secular usage. Upset by this decision, several individuals got together and formed the Friends of St. Patrick's, a group attempting to get this decision reversed and the church building reopened. My guest today is a member of that group, Matt Lovira of Catskill. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Jack. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for doing this.
Yes.
So, the group, the Friends group, was formed last year in response to this closing?
That's correct.
How quickly after the announcement, I think most of us were at the service when the announcement was made last May. How soon after that was it decided that this group was going to get together?
I believe it was shortly after that. Yeah. Deb Johnson and Anthony Petriani are really the organizers of the group. They've done all the paperwork and filled out the necessary forms to, you know, become a non-for-profit group. And they really took the bull by the horns and, you know, led the charge and are trying to rally people together. You know, I was involved in the parish for a very long time, as you know.
Oh, yes.
So, I mean, I certainly wanted to support them and help them out in any way that I could.
Yes, I think we all want that building reopened.
Right.
Yeah. So, what steps have been taken so far to in this correspondence with Washington?
Yes, they have. Deb and Anthony met with a canon lawyer through the phone. And he actually reached out to the group after it was in the local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And Brody was his name. I forgot his last name. Yeah. But he was really instrumental. Brody Hale, right. He was very instrumental in helping them get the proper documentation to file an appeal with the diocese.
Okay.
After that decree of relegation, I believe it was called, announcing that it wasn't going to be a church anymore. So they had a certain amount of time for that to file that appeal. So they did, and they actually sent it to the Apostolic Nuncio in Washington, mm-hmm. who forwarded it to the Vatican in Rome. So, and since then, I think they've gotten a response from them saying that a case was formed,
okay.
And they were going to speak to the diocesan bishop and then go from there in terms of. You know, what I don't know what their ultimate decision is going to be, and I think that the timeline is coming close to a decision to be made.
Okay. Yeah, we're recording the show 2 weeks before it airs. So
right, so maybe there'll be a decision. Who knows?
Maybe, but right now we just have to hope for the best.
Yes. And I actually, I felt strongly about this, and, you know, as a Greene County legislator, I wanted to support them, so I took it upon myself to write to the Vatican myself. I mean, I wrote to Bishop Scharfenberger. I did not get a reply. And I sent him a kind of a history of the parish,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, to show him that the church building is important to the Catskill community.
Especially being the county seat, too.
Being the county seat, right. And, you know, during my time as I was campaigning as a legislator, a lot of people knew me from the church, and that was one of their biggest priorities was, you know, they wanted to see the church opened again. So I felt it was, you know, my responsibility to at least write a letter to the bishop explaining that how important the church is to the community and, you know, how important church buildings are to the community as well, which he, I'm sure, is well aware of, you know, and the theology behind that. So I didn't get a reply from him, but I did send it to the Apostolic Nuncio in Washington, okay. and I did get a reply from him.
Oh, great.
So I didn't get it from the Albany bishop, but I got it from the head guy in Washington. And we sent it to, they actually sent the letter and the documents that I sent to our bishop in Albany to Rome. And it went to the Vatican to go with this case to help Deb and Anthony and that group, you know, with their findings and so forth. So I felt kind of happy that I got a reply from the Apostolic Nuncio, and
yes.
you know, I sent him the Daily Mail article, you know, that publicized that I wrote a letter.
Oh yeah.
So I sent that to the Nuncio in Washington as well, and he wrote back again and thanked me for sending it, and he said he would pass it along.
Oh, so, wonderful.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, it does sound sounds promising. At least they didn't come back right away and say, no, that's it.
Right.
So I think that the first correspondence was back in late 2016, like December or something.
Yes, I want to say that the group did send a letter to the Bishop of Albany, and he did reply and said that,
okay.
you know, the church could not be opened again, and, you know, it was time to for a new chapter in the history of the parish and so forth. So I know that they are working very hard, and it's really Deb and Anthony and a few others, Carol Miller, mm-hmm. Joan Abrahamson and her husband, Maureen Murphy. Really have been the ones involved. I mean, with my schedule, it's hard for me to help them.
Sure.
So I mean, I try to go to as much as I can to support the cause, mm-hmm. but they're really the driving force behind it. So I'm just there in prayer, you know.
Well, that's one of the best things you can do.
Yes, yes.
Now, the decision, when it does come from the Vatican now, if the answer is no, that you know, Bishop Scharfenberger's decision stands.
Right.
What would be the next step? Do we just end it and say, well, we tried, or is there another step?
I don't think that they're going to end it. I think Deb and Anthony really are going to continue to pursue it until there is no other option available.
Okay.
You know, I know Deb is kind of has her hopes set that, you know, the bishop will give them more time and the community more time to raise the necessary funds to fix any necessary issues,
okay.
you know, that are with the building. And I'm sure after being closed for 10 years that, you know, those some of those issues have, you know, been more extreme than they probably were in the beginning.
I would think so. A building that's not used regularly or maintained regularly.
So I know that they're going to continue to pursue it. Now, what they can use it for, that I don't know.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, as far as the community, I think the more this gets in the newspaper, that everybody else in town, whether you're Catholic or not, don't even have to be a churchgoer, frankly, just can appreciate a beautiful old building.
Right.
And want to see it restored. I mean, we've had ecumenical services in there, and people have said, this is a beautiful church.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, for those of you who, any listeners who have not seen it from the inside, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous in there.
Yeah, it's
yes,
a
we're
historic.
Both a little biased, granted.
Right, right. It's a historic church.
Yeah, it is on the Greene County Register of Historic Places, for that matter. There's a plaque on the front that was put there, I think, during the centennial that I spoke about earlier in 1985-86.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in our chapel the other day after Mass. And I wonder if this would ever be a compromise between the people who want the church reopened and others who are satisfied with the status quo.
Mm.
About maybe using, if the church was reopened, using it during the warm weather months only so that it would not have to be heated during the winter, and then perhaps using the Father Murphy Center for the winter time. That was just a thought.
Right, right.
You know, it would be.
I mean, it was used for over 100 years in the winter, summer, spring, fall. I mean, I remember I served on the altar with our friend Father Murphy for many, many years, and I remember being in there on very hot days. And with the robe on, and you know, sweating, you know, up there on the altar. So
yes, for our listeners, there was no air conditioning in that building.
Right,
you get cross-dressed by opening the doors and the windows on each side.
Right,
but yeah,
and Father Murphy was conservative on the heat too. So even in the wintertime, wear an extra sweater. He used to tell me.
Well, I remember in that building, he would. I'd be there at nighttime, like the Stations of the Cross during Lent.
That's right.
And he would turn that heat on. And this is an old boiler down there where he would turn on, you hear this bang, bang. It's like you know, Quasimodo down in the basement banging on the heat pipes.
When the heat first was going, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I know that this group does get together on the first Thursday of the month.
They do.
On the church steps.
Yes, they actually do that. That was something new that they just started to, you know, to pray for the reopening of the church. And that's actually coming up on Thursday, July 6th.
Yeah.
So they meet on that first Thursday. We've been praying the rosary.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And, you know, that's been important. You have to have prayer, you know, as an integral part of this. And, you know, if it's the Lord's will to be done, then it is his will to be done.
Yeah. Exhaust all possibilities, and that's done on the around 5:15 on the first Thursday of the month.
That's correct.
On the church steps.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
They actually also, if I could mention, they have a barbecue coming up.
Okay.
It's going to be on Thursday, July 13th. They kind of did it in conjunction with the music in the park that's going on.
Oh, good thinking.
So they're going to do a barbecue sale at the Advanced Auto parking lot from 3:30 to 6:30. On July 13th. So, and that's going to, you know, help to, you know, with some of the expenses that they've accrued with mailings and, you know, and then starting this account to try to, you know, get some money to save this building. So if anybody wants tickets, you can contact Deb, you know, and, you know, she definitely was willing to have her phone number if I could give that for you.
Yes, if our listeners are interested in supporting this,
sure.
The phone number?
Phone number is 518-943-6990, so 6990.
Okay.
And that's Deb, and you can leave a message with her if you're interested, or if you're interested in helping the cause. You know, I'm sure they could use some extra volunteers.
Well, so I will definitely be buying a ticket for that.
Yes, definitely.
I'm looking forward to a good chicken dinner that night.
Definitely. So,
now, the organization has applied for nonprofit status?
Yes, they have. And I believe, I want to say one of the group members actually paid for it themselves,
Wow.
You know, to get the necessary paperwork filed. And I believe they're in that process.
Great.
I'm not sure of the specifics on that. Like I said, I don't attend all of their meetings. Mm-hmm. You know, I try to go when I can, but with the legislator stuff, it's kind of hard for me to break away.
I know. Yeah, Matt, for our listeners, Matt has a very busy schedule, not only all of this, but he's also a teacher at the Catskill Elementary School.
That's correct.
That would be enough for one person right there, I would think.
But I'm on summer vacation now when this airs, so I'm looking forward to summer break.
I bet.
But yes, I teach fourth grade at the elementary school also, besides being a Greene County legislator.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You're never a loss for things to do.
That's true.
Somebody, I think when I was at the prayer service the last week or 2 weeks ago now, mentioned that they might even try to lease the building if the bishop actually says, no, I'm not going to change my decision.
I think that's one of the options, you know, that they could try to lease it or have it opened on special occasions or something like that.
Somebody wants to have a wedding or a funeral in there.
Right,
at least
right.
That would be better than nothing. If we can't have it on the full usage every week, at least have that would be in use and maintained.
I've been following a church down in New York City called Our Lady of Peace, and I followed them on Facebook, and they were in a very similar situation where the cardinal had closed their church, and the community still wanted it opened, and they closed it just because they were merging parishes, and this group actually just had a mass in there, you know. So it was like they did make some progress to try to talk to this cardinal to get the church open. Now, they still don't have their parish back, but they were at least able to have some type of anniversary mass in there.
Okay, well, I would
take
that. So
we're keeping our, you know, prayers going, so we need everybody's prayers to
absolutely
to support this.
And actually, we're recording the show at our studio here in Hudson, and I happen to notice it's not a Catholic church, but the Presbyterian church on Warren Street, the corner of 4th and Warren, I notice is closed. And as I know, there's a sign in front, they want to help with that. I almost want to find out what their issue is and see what they're doing, you know?
Right.
You know? And I remember back in the 90s, the Second Baptist Church on Main Street in Catskill was in danger of demolition.
That's right.
The ceiling had collapsed in there. It wasn't just a little bit of plaster falling. It had collapsed.
And the First Reformed Church on Main Street, the same thing. Their side wall actually was caving in, and they never left the building. Imagine that.
Yes.
So
I know. So I kind of wonder what these groups did, if they might have any ideas. It couldn't hurt to do a little brainstorming, I guess.
No, that's true.
So just one of my once in a while great moments of thought.
Yeah. No,
they don't come that often, so I got to write the state down.
That's true, though. That's very true.
Yeah. Okay. Now, earlier in the show, I mentioned some of our long-serving pastors.
Oh, yes.
And I remember, and the one I mentioned was probably our longest serving, 34 years from 1971 to 2005.
That's correct.
Was our beloved Father John J. Murphy.
That's right.
So we have a little time here, and I think we both have a couple of Father Murphy stories that we can tell.
I'm sure if anybody you know, that's listening knows Father Murphy, I'm sure everybody has their own Father Murphy story.
Yes.
I mean, he was a local legend, Greene County legend. It doesn't matter where he went, everybody knew him.
Yeah, any denomination, I think everybody knew him. Not
every denomination.
You could have
Catholic,
been
non-Catholic.
Devout Catholic or atheist. Everybody knew Father Murphy.
Yes. And he helped a lot of people, Catholic and non-Catholics alike.
Oh, he's a good man.
He was a very good man, and, you know, he was definitely, you know, a big part of our community. He might not have been the best administrator, but he certainly was a parish priest where he actually cared about his flock, and he really did. And, you know, like I said, I had the pleasure of serving with him for many years on the altar from, I want to say, 1992 until he retired. You know, I was up on the 2005. I was up on the altar with him almost every Saturday and Sunday, right up from high school to college until I started teaching.
I remember seeing you up there.
So, you know, and I did a lot of work with him. And, you know, he really did care about the community. And like I said, it didn't matter. Everybody knew him. You know, he would go in Price Chopper almost every day to get his fish, you know, for lunch. And, you know, him and Father Richard, you know, the associate pastor, he was retired and they would have lunch together every day. And he really, really was a good man and a good priest.
Yeah, I remember one of my former co-worker when I worked here in Hudson at Columbia Opportunities, Kimberly Webster. Her husband is a Lutheran pastor, Stan Webster. And she can recall seeing Father Murphy in Price Chopper, going down, getting his fish or whatever, you know, hands behind his back, just going, you know, singing to himself, going down the aisle. And so I can just picture him doing that very easily.
And, you know, like I said, I would help him a lot. And, you know, I was very involved with the religious ed program, the youth ministry. And anytime I would go in the office, one of his first things, you know, you're all business, kid. You're all business, you know, because I'd go in there, get my copies ready, get everything ready to teach religious ed. And, you know, I always remember him being in there. And, you know, we really did a lot. You know, he wanted to get the parish census together before he retired. I helped him with that. And that man knew everybody. He did. He didn't have anything written down. He went up and down the streets, and he knew exactly where everybody lived, and he wrote a list for me of everybody that was in the parish.
And that's
incredible. A lot of people don't know that, but that's what he did before he retired. And then the stack of baptism certificates that I entered in the book for him. You know, we entered about 300 baptisms that he had, you know, in the rectory, you know, that he had to put in the book. So, you know, but he knew where every piece of paper was, and he knew everybody that was in the parish. And, you know, he did it all from memory.
You know? Well, one story that I had, it's the one I told Matt to help me remember in case I forgot. My memory is like a sieve sometimes. As far as Father's memory, going through some old pictures and newspaper clippings at home about, well, shortly before Father retired, I came across a picture from the Catskill Daily Mail of the first communion mass in 1980. And the picture was taken by Nicky Martin, a longtime photographer.
Great man.
And it was a picture of a little girl going up to receive her first communion in a little veil, like little brides, and with Father Murphy holding the communion host down to her mouth, and the caption reads, you know, the body of Christ, and it describes the service. And I took that clipping into church a couple days later to show Murph after Mass. One of his nicknames, Murph. And I said, hey, Father, does anybody in this picture look familiar? Meaning to for him to say, oh, yeah, look at me in that picture, you know? He remembered the name of the little girl. Here, at this point, was a 25-year-old picture, a black and white picture, no less, of a little girl whose face is pretty much covered with a, you know, from the profile with a veil on. And he knew who she was, where she lived, and who she had married. That just threw me for a loop. That's not the reaction I was expecting that day.
he certainly knew all the families, and you know, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to help Deb and Anthony, is because your family, my family,
families have a long history of St. Patrick's.
And those families really are the reason why I wanted to get involved, because I didn't want to see, you know, all of the history and the memories that, you know, all of our families, the blood, sweat, and tears that they put in to build that church. And I remember Father Murphy being very proud of the builder of St. Patrick's. And this was one of the points I made to the bishop in the letter that I sent, was the builder of the parish was Father Finneran. And the back altar, the, you know, where the tabernacle is, is dedicated to Father Finneran.
I didn't realize that earlier in the show I had given the history of the church. I mentioned Father Finneran as the most notable pastor, obviously.
He was the builder of the church.
I did not know that about the altar.
You know, I used to kneel back there all the time, and I would read, you know, in loving memory of Father William Finneran.
For heaven's sake.
And Murph always, you know, would mention that, and he says, you know, he was the pastor here, and he's buried in our cemetery, and he is. And I sent the picture of the gravestone to the bishop, and I said, here is the builder of our church buried in our cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in his memory, you know, you think of, you know, what it took to build that in the early 1900s.
Mid-1885. Yeah.
And really, the blood, sweat, and tears that all of those families, you know, yours, mine, so many people,
mm-hmm.
you know, put into that place. And, you know, and that was one of the points I made in the letter to the bishop, and that was sent to the Vatican. And I took a picture of the actual gravestone, and I sent that picture up,
okay.
you know, to Albany and to Rome. So
I know there's some people who might say, you know, that the church is just a building. And
right. And I don't agree with that because it is a building, but so is St. Peter's in Rome.
Yeah.
So is the, you know, the Basilica in Washington and St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. Mm. They're all buildings, and they were built to be gathering spaces for the community. And
right.
And it's important.
And people have had special celebrations in this church, weddings, baptisms,
absolutely.
Funerals, First Communion, confirmation,
absolutely.
Everything. And it's like, you know, my home, you know, yes, the house where I live, yes, it's a building.
Right.
But if, God forbid, it were destroyed tonight in a fire or something.
Right.
It would take me a considerable amount of time to get over that and to, you know, get my head around it, because it's where I have memories. It's the only place I've ever lived.
Right.
And I
certainly,
for the first year of my life, so it's
45 years. I know people understand that the church is more than a building. It's a community.
Yeah.
You know, but the community needs a place to gather.
Yeah.
And that's the gather, and that was the purpose of why they built churches, you know, for communities to gather. The church meets in that hall,
right?
You know, and that's what's important. And you know, the aesthetic value of the building, makes you really feel that you're in the presence of God. Anytime I walked in there, I walked in there many, many times, just me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd go in there and, you know, either get something set up or whatever. And every time I walked in, it didn't matter day or night, light or darkness, you always felt the presence of God with the candles and lit. You know, I didn't need any lights.
Yeah.
I used to just walk in there in the dark,
oh.
you know, and you'd be able to see where you are going. So, you know, it really is powerful.
I was in there quite a bit on my own, too. I'd go for a walk, make a visit or something.
Absolutely.
I know my mom was in there almost every morning, going downtown doing her errands or whatever. But
that's right.
Most days would stop in there, and just you could sit in there in silence. And this church has some of the most beautiful stained glass windows.
Yes.
And there's, I used to sit, my family and I used to sit in the front pew on closest to the back door of the church where the St. Joseph statue is.
Right.
And
I remember
the sunlight just coming through the high windows on the right side wall, the rectory side wall.
Mm-hmm.
It was just incredible. What a feeling of peace, especially not only during Mass, yes, but when you're in there alone and it's quiet.
Right.
It was
a little upsetting to find out that they sold the Stations of the Cross to, you know, the church up in Troy.
Yeah.
You know, stations that were original to the building, you know, that, you know, fit in that building.
Yeah, it'd be hard to replace them.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's any way to get them back or not. You know,
I don't know. I would hope that community, if the church opened, that they would realize how important it is to the people. And
yeah, cause I think I read in the paper at the time the story came out that church is up in Troy. I won't give a name, but that they had put details of the acquisition of the stations on their website, and then not realizing all the commotion that was going on down here, and then they took that information off their website.
That's correct.
So they probably feel a little, okay, awkward moment here. You know, now what are they going to do? I don't know. I'd feel bad for them if they really needed stations.
But the group does have the original post that was on that website, so they were able to copy that as to what was posted on the Troy website.
Oh.
So they had that, and I believe that was sent to the diocese and to Rome as well.
Okay.
So all of that whole story went over, you know.
Yeah.
Went across the sea.
Oh man, I'm anxious to see what's going to happen with this.
I know. They tried their best.
Yeah.
And, you know, I give them a lot of credit, Deb and Anthony. They took a lot and, you know, took a lot on their shoulders to try to get this organized.
Yeah.
So
just to have the thought to do it, most people I think would just say, "Well, that's it," you know, Bishop Mayer's decision. That's the end of that.
That's right.
And
I think
live
that's
with it.
Right. And I was happy that they're pursuing it. And I'm happy to support them.
So am I.
Yeah. Yep.
So am I.
You know, whatever I can do, and that's why I agreed to come on and, you know, yeah, talk to you about it, because I've kind of remained in the background. I really mm-hmm. haven't been involved because of my history with the parish.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't want to become the center of attention because I'm not really leading this group.
I mean,
you know, but I do support them, and, you know, I'm bringing my constituents' concerns.
Exactly.
You know, the people that I represent, you know, they were people that were, you know, very vocal about that to me.
Now, speaking of the constituents now, I recall that a few months ago, it was last fall, like around November,
mm-hmm.
Since this story has been in the paper so much now that the building is unsafe,
right,
or deemed unsafe anyhow, that at one of the village board meetings, it was brought up by some residents who live nearby the church saying, hey, wait a minute, if this building is unsafe,
right,
you know, is it in danger of coming down? Should it be inspected? You know? And our local village building inspector went in.
That's correct.
And said it was not
going to collapse. Mm-hmm. There is some, you know, when they went in to check the building, they mm-hmm. took part of the ceiling down. So, of course, you're going to have to fix that part of the ceiling that was taken down. So
yeah,
that's really what was noted in the report. And I remember talking specifically to the village building inspector saying that the foundation of the building was strong. That building was not going to come down. And you think about it. I mean, any
yeah.
of these old buildings, the courthouse, the library,
yeah.
Irving School.
All in the same
They were all
age.
Built around the same time period.
Yeah.
And actually, the architecture and the builder was Holdridge. And I did some research about that. And, you know, the rectory, the church, the
mm-hmm.
library, they're all kind of built by this Holdridge guy.
Okay.
And, you know, and things were built to last.
Yeah.
You know, and that certainly, you know, he saw that the building was built to last, the village building inspector.
Yeah.
You know, and anybody that lives on Spring Street, I'm sure, gets water in their basement. I mean, I get water in my basement.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean I'm going to leave my home. You know?
Right. Yeah, things can be done.
Right.
Well, I'm glad, first of all, that the residents brought that up and that our village inspector
yes,
got in there. That was wonderful.
And he took pictures.
Oh.
And they actually put the pictures on the Patrick's Church Facebook page.
I'm going to have to go on this. I'm not on Facebook. That's the problem. But
yeah,
I'd love to look at
that. They put them on there. And actually, you know, when I looked at it, everything looked the same. And I want to say those pictures were like in November or early December.
Yeah.
And the Stations of the Cross were still on the wall, by the way.
Right. I think that happened like late December, like right after Christmas or something.
Right.
Yeah. I would give anything to just go through that door and just stand there for maybe even 30 seconds just to look.
I know.
I would give anything to do that. I really would.
We have to ask Father Murphy to intercede for us up in heaven.
Yes.
And he was a good man.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun with him.
Oh, we did.
A quick story.
Sure.
We actually went to Toronto, Canada
mm-hmm.
in 2002 for World Youth Day.
Yeah.
And we saw Pope John Paul II, of course, now Saint Pope John Paul
yes.
II. And Murph came with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he took the drive and he had his black, you know, the black suit on, you know, the
yep.
black pants, the black shirt.
Yep.
And it was 100 degrees up in Toronto, Canada. And here this man is walking around with black. And we couldn't find the van.
Oh.
We parked at the World Youth Day and we're roaming the streets of Toronto, Canada with Father Murphy. And we couldn't remember where we parked the van.
Oh, my gosh.
But he loved it. He loved supporting the youth and... You know, it was certainly a trip that I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And I saw a saint.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
Pope
right.
John Paul II.
Yeah, fairly recent, too. I mean, considering
yes.
15 years. Now, Murph is another one. I think he knew he would know about anything that was wrong in that church building because I read somewhere at one time, I think it was one of his anniversary masses, his birthday celebrations
mm-hmm.
or something, when we had a couple of those before he left us.
Oh, yes. I always made sure I got up on the podium and announced when his birthday and anniversary was.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd be like, why do you got to do that?
That's how he was. Yeah, as a side note, this was one of the most humble men.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect for a priest. He really was.
Yes, he was.
I mean, nothing fazed him. You could have a disaster. Nothing really fazed him.
Right.
Earlier in the show, I talked about the steeple fire in 1999.
Right.
And even then, he didn't like asking for money for repairs.
I know.
He didn't like doing it, but, I mean, people gave. Everybody
right.
gave for that,
right.
of course. But I
and
remember,
the same with St. Bridget's. I mean, we went to St. Bridget's, and then when the St. Bridget's fire occurred, you know, he didn't want to close. He didn't want to leave St. Bridget's, but he knew, you know, what had to be done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'll do a show on that one someday.
Yeah,
but, maybe
right.
a year from now, so I'll do
right,
that one.
Right.
But I think I read, I think one of those celebrations where he, with Father Murphy and our longtime custodian, sexton, Felix O'Grady, knew every nook and cranny of that church. I don't mean just the interior. I mean, you know, crawl space and the wiring and plumbing and everything. Between the two of them, they probably did more work in there. They knew every detail of that building.
Yes, he did.
That's incredible, yeah. I love to just drop the names like that, you know, Felix and stuff. Oh, my gosh. He was another longtime fixture at the parish and the school.
Absolutely. And, you know, and when there were problems, he fixed the problems.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that, you know, maybe there should have been a capital campaign. I mean, I know they did that in the 1980s.
Yes,
but,
for the centennial.
You know, whenever there was an issue, he was ready to, he was right there to fix it, you know.
Yeah.
But, and he was proud of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he spent a lot of time at the school. He didn't want to see the school close.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with all of that, you know, he really put his heart and soul into the parish and the school.
Yeah. I remember when, I mean, he always loved being around the kids.
Oh, yes.
And,
yep. Well, he gave the youth the convent behind the school. You know, we had the youth center up there.
That's right, behind the old high school on Woodland Avenue for those listeners.
Right. He was right away of, you know, let's make that building for the kids.
That's
you know, when
right.
the convent closed.
I forgot about that. Yes, he did.
Because we used to meet underneath St. Bridget's Church.
Mm-hmm.
And then we left there when the convent opened up, and he was all for it. You know, we would have retreats there. Patty Duchesne really did a lot of work and you know, getting the kids involved. And we had a great program with the kids and the youth. And, you know, I still see some of those kids today. You know, they're not kids anymore, but you know, they still have memories of Friday night youth night, you know, at the youth center.
Oh, so, yeah, that's right.
He definitely loved the kids.
He did. And I know that, I won't hang on this issue too much, but when the scandal came out early 2002 with priests.
Right.
And, you know, changes had to be made. And I remember one of a former guest I had on the show, Marie Bitter, telling me at the time that it just about broke his heart because... And this is somebody who he would never do anything inappropriate, not Murph, but that he always loved being around the kids up at the elementary school.
I know.
And, you know, hugging the kids and stuff like that, and they loved him. And then when he couldn't do that anymore because of all this stuff, very hard for him because the kids still wanted to. What did they know?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
they want to grow up and hug Father Murphy, and he couldn't do it. But, yeah, Murph was a unique guy. He had a little flower garden up in front of called the new elementary school, which was the old high school building on Woodland Avenue. These buildings have changed a lot over the years.
I know.
Different uses. I've been in all of them for different things because that was my high school. But he had a flower garden there on the side. And one night I was riding my bike through there. And he was working on it. I wound up helping him.
Oh, so, yes.
Yeah, that was, you know, how I get into that one. But
he loved
to
garden.
He
actually had a garden right up until he retired.
Yeah.
Up at St. Anthony's Friary,
which
is
a little
still
sunroom there. Yeah,
and he still had his garden going right up when he retired.
Yeah,
and he would still come back to do things in the garden because after he retired, he went out to Sacred Heart in Cairo.
Yes,
and he served out there, you know, just filling in for a little bit. And, you know, he was still in and out, you know, still very involved. And
I think we all remember. Now, I've done this. I hope this comes out well on the radio, but I thought I'm going to make a fool of myself. Who cares? That wouldn't be the first time. Father had his certain phrases that he was known for.
Yes.
Such as, you know, he had a little stammer too in his voice.
Yeah.
I would never do this to make fun. Yeah, this imitation is flattery. That's what I'm doing. I would
absolutely
never say anything bad about this man. Yeah, thinking like, everybody's here, you know, man. Beautiful day out there, thank God, summertime is here, you know.
He always, he would, oh, everybody's here, everybody's here.
Oh, happy day.
Oh, happy days, yep. He always, he had his expressions. Susie Q, I still use some of them in the classroom.
Susie Q, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I remember when I was in grade school, you know, I don't think he knew my name. I mean, that's, I think when he did call me by name, it would be,
John, because I don't think he knew I liked Jack at the
right,
time.
Right.
And I was 6, 7 years old. I'm not gonna, whatever. Yeah, I'm not gonna correct the priest. Yeah, you can call me whatever you want. I mean, I think it was even Butch sometimes when he didn't know the name. Yeah, he just come up with his name. Okay, Butch.
That's right. He did that a lot. Right?
Yeah,
he did. A lot.
But then he could remember like that girl in the communion picture. You know, it's incredible.
Yes.
So
great man, great priest.
He was. He was very, very missed. There'll never be another Father Murphy, that's for sure.
That's true, and I know he's smiling down upon us, you know.
Yeah,
as we sit here, you know, your relationship with him, my relationship with him, and you know, I know that he would be happy that we're trying to do something to save his church.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, another one of his expressions. You're in charge. You're in charge, there, kid. Huh? You're in charge. You're in charge.
That's right.
Okay, carry on. Carry on.
That's right. He said that a lot. You're in charge. I say, Father, I'm not in charge. No, thank you.
I used to, for a lot of years after the Sunday Mass, I would, between Masses, I would straighten up the bulletins and the missalettes and the pews and so forth. And one day he came in and says, what are you telling me? You're in charge. You're in charge, kid. You're in charge of the hotel.
Yeah, that's right. And he actually said that often, you know.
Yeah.
He would say he's going back to the hotel.
Yeah,
that was one of his favorite expressions. Heading back to the hotel.
It was Father Murphyisms, I guess we could call it.
Right. He certainly had a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, I think.
I'm thankful that you asked me to come on, and I definitely now have to have you on my talk show.
Yes, Matt has a show of his own on YouTube. It's not a radio show.
Yes, it's a YouTube show.
Yes.
And it's actually, I don't know if I can announce the websites also.
You can give the website, yes.
Yeah, it's thedailymail.net and registerstar.com.
Okay.
They actually host the show for me.
And it's called Live with Matt?
Live with Matt, yes.
Okay.
And you can check out my website at www.livewithmatt.weebly.com.
Okay.
And I do a weekly show, and I definitely want to have you on to talk about this show that you're doing here.
I would love to do that, Matt. Thank you.
On the radio, definitely. And we come every Tuesday night on YouTube, and then, of course, the rest of the week, the Daily Mail and Register Star pick it up. So,
great.
It's really a community talk show just to talk about things going on in the community.
Perfect to mention that on community radio here
on
WGXC.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so check it out, and check out my Facebook page, Live with Matt, and follow me all over social media.
Okay.
You know, I try to keep everybody interested.
I'll definitely do that, Matt. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jack.
I appreciate you being on this. Yeah, as I said in the beginning for my listeners, that I've wanted to do, this show is about, you know, local history of Greene County.
Absolutely.
Historic buildings or just people who have... growing up in the village, I had Harry Vincent on last October, for example, just telling about his life growing up in Catskill. For anything in the county, not just Catskill. But, and I've wanted to do a show about St. Patrick since I started the show, which my first show was last May.
Wow.
And now with all of it in the news lately, I said, this is the time. Good time as any.
Absolutely.
So I've had a great time doing this one. So again, thank you, Matt.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Jack.
Look forward to being on your show.
Yes, definitely. We'll definitely have you on.
Okay. And just before we sign off the program, we have some extra time. And as is my custom, I got some extra music to put in here. Kind of fits with the theme of the show. And it features my favorite singer. We have four hymns here by Johnny Cash. They are Softly and Tenderly, Amazing Grace, Old Rugged Cross, and Rock of Ages. Enjoy.
Rock of Ages, cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee. Let the water and the blood from thy wounded side which flow be of sin the double cure. Save from wrath and make me pure. Let me hide myself in thee. In my hand no price bring, simply to thy cross I cling. While I draw this fleeting breath, when my eyes shall close in death, Lord, when I rise to worlds unknown and behold thee on thy throne, Rock of Ages, cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee. Let me hide myself in thee.
Was great.
old rugged cross, the emblem of suffering and shame. And I love that old cross where the dearest and best for a world of lost sinners was slain. So I'll cherish the old rugged cross, till my trophies at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday.
You've been listening to Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh. And our next broadcast will be on Tuesday, July 25th at 2 p.m. here on WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you for listening and have a great day.